That wolf became an icon, for lack of a better term, for this community. And when someone killed it, people were upset.
Revisiting the Romeo poaching case in Juneau. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, July 18th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a controversial federal crab auction.
I don't think it's fair to any guy that plays by the rules to have that product out in the marketplace.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Got a great idea? Need financing and technical support to get it started? Well, the AFN Alaska Marketplace can help you make it happen. You could win an award for starting a business, or if you just have a great idea for a business. Learn more at alaskamarketplace.org or by calling 907-274-3611. The deadline to submit your idea or essay is August 1st, so don't delay. This message sponsored by the Alaska Federation of Natives.
Some members of Congress are calling this week a make-it-or-break-it historical moment as they debate raising the nation's debt limit and shrinking the actual debt. But Alaska's Representative Don Young is not participating in the work in Washington. Instead, he's in Alaska for the week. The congressman's office says he has a long-scheduled fundraiser for a charity named for his late wife, Lou Young, that benefits Alaska Native families with cancer. It includes a fundraising fishing trip. His office said the fundraiser has been in the works for a year. He does not have public events on his schedule. The event will be in Whittier from Wednesday the 20th through Friday the 22nd. Because he's in Alaska, Young will miss a vote tomorrow in the House on a Republican push bill called Cut, Cap, and Balance, which would require the federal government to make cuts, cap spending, and create a constitutional amendment ordering that the federal budget be balanced. Young has not yet weighed in on the plan. He skipped a planning and information meeting with his fellow House Republicans on Friday. The bill is expected to pass the House tomorrow, but it will die in the Senate, where Democrats are opposed to it. President Obama has said he would veto it anyway. Two Fort Wainwright-based soldiers were killed in Afghanistan yesterday. The members of the 1st Striker Brigade combat team were part of a group on foot patrol in the southern part of the country when an improvised explosive device detonated. Seven other Striker soldiers were injured in the attack. The Army is withholding the names of the soldiers pending the completion of the next of kin notification. The deaths are the 6th and 7th for the 4,000-member Fort Wainwright-based Striker Brigade since beginning a year-long deployment to Afghanistan in April. BP has had another spill on the North Slope. Liquid squirted out of a conduit under a road during a pressure test at the Lisburn Field. An estimated 2,100 to 4,200 gallons of material from a well mixed with methanol escaped from an 8-inch pipe inside the conduit and came out both ends of it, according to the State Department of Environmental Conservation's on-scene coordinator, John Abel.
When they were pressurizing the fluids in that pipe, it burst in this it's a roadway crossing. So it goes from an above ground location through a conduit under a road. So it's buried, you know, about 5 feet, and it opens, the conduit opens both ends.
The liquids ended up on the pad and in a pond on the tundra. It is not yet known how much crude oil was in the mix. They are now scraping up the gravel and the tundra. The spill itself was stopped fairly quickly, Abel says, because workers could use valves on either side of the conduit to take the pressure off.
You know, when they realized that there was a problem, they drained off the pressure, so it, instead of just continuing to source out of the release point, as the pressure drains to zero, they open the valve and let it get into a, you know, down pipe from where it was isolated between the two valves.
The pipe inside the conduit just burst at about 900 pounds of pressure. Abel says the cause of the break is not yet known. The response is ongoing and will include cleaning the gravel and restoring the tundra. There's been another twist in a high-profile poaching case out of Juneau. The man convicted of baiting bears and illegally shooting a wolf is now in jail. 41-year-old Park Myers III could be behind bars for up to a month because he was working while he accepted unemployment insurance benefits. Myers was still on probation after pleading guilty in the poaching case. It included the taking of a black wolf, believed to be the friendly and popular wolf known by many as Romeo. KTOO's Matt Miller has the story.
Myers took the stand twice Friday, looking pale and his hair cropped short. He suggested the theft of benefits partially stemmed from a series of reporting and communication snafus with the State Department of Labor. Myers and his wife lost their jobs after he was named in the wolf and bear shootings, and he says they're now bankrupt.
What kind of assets do you have?
Now?
Yes.
Nothing. I have a car.
What do you mean? What do you mean nothing?
We have sold everything that we've had to pay our attorney.
Me?
No, sir. The attorney we had before.
Myers says he was not wolf hunting and had a .22 caliber rimfire cartridge for ptarmigan while scouting for trapping season. In an unusual move, those who claim some sort of impact were allowed to make their own statements. Filmmaker and former game board member Joel Bennett called Myers mean-spirited and malicious. Bennett described in an encounter that his dying wife had with the black wolf.
She was able, with great effort, to regularly walk or ski to the edge of the lake and observe Romeo. He was the last wild thing of beauty and inspiration that my wife ever saw. What Park Myers killed had kept another human being alive longer.
Among some of the underlying threads throughout the whole case include suspicions that Myers' former defense attorney and the former district attorney were not being entirely truthful when they both stated earlier that Myers had no criminal history. Such infractions for contributing to delinquency of a minor, although some time ago and unrelated to hunting, could have been a factor in the recent sentencing in the poaching case. Critics of Myers also think there's evidence suggesting that both Myers and hunting partner Jeffrey Peacock planned the taking of the black wolf, and that Peacock boasted about the kill when he returned to work at a print shop in Pennsylvania. Current District Attorney Dave Brower argued that a sentence agreement be approved and Myers go to jail for 30 days.
So that wolf became an icon, for lack of a better term, for this community. And when someone killed it, people were upset, and that's understandable.
But public defender Kevin Higgins says it's already gone way too far, especially with other allegations lobbed at Myers, whether substantiated or otherwise.
When you have a wolf named Romeo, and you have a writer who has identified Shakespeare as one of his influences, and said Shakespeare is all about simple stuff, and you have a case with facts like these, it's hard not to be reminded of, as many people have reminded me of, The Merchant of Venice. And the people who want their pound of flesh, no matter what the cost.
Myers maintained until the very end that it was not premeditated.
Not that it should matter, it doesn't make it any less wrong, but I do not believe that the wolf that we killed was Romeo.
District Court Judge Keith Levy says there was not enough evidence presented that Myers and Peacock actually sought out or targeted the wolf.
I don't think that the fact that this wolf may or may not have been a particular wolf, and I know some people feel absolutely certain that it was Romeo, that in itself, if somebody inadvertently shot that wolf, I don't think that in itself is a justification for changing the way I look at the case.
Myers was to report to Lemon Creek Correctional Center Sunday evening to begin serving his sentence. The clock has been reset for his 2-year probationary period. Myers also must still pay fines and restitution from the original hunting violation. He was ordered to pay $6,600 total during the previous sentencing hearing in November, but a figure of $7,500 was used on Friday. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an unusual find on a Sitka beach.
She had all these pictures of marine life, and there's a couple of the helicopters and the planes and stuff. And then, boom, it goes to this ordnance-looking deal.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Timing is everything. A mother who waits until her child is at least 2 years old before becoming pregnant again is making the best decision for herself and her baby. The mother has a better chance of regaining health and energy between pregnancies, and her baby has a better chance of being born on time and at a good weight. Talk to your health care provider to find out how to plan your pregnancies. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Officials with the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation's Food Safety Program are warning restaurants and processor owner-operators about fraudulent food inspectors. Jim Moore is an environmental health officer with DEC. He says he's heard from three food establishment owners in the Bethel area who had been contacted about an inspection. Moore says a caller says they need to schedule an inspection and the proprietor will have to pay an upfront fee for it. He says owners have been wary.
They didn't give any information, then the inspector never showed up. So, of course, I had let them know that, you know, of course, we don't do that in the field. We would never charge for inspection. They already know that they're issued permits through DEC.
Moore says in addition to the three he's heard of, other inspectors have also taken reports of attempts at fraudulent inspections. He says generally inspectors do make a courtesy call to establishments to ensure that the proper staff will be on hand, but it's not possible to call everyone. The permits are paid on an annual basis in November, unless they're for seasonal activity. He says the only time inspectors would collect money is if there's been a violation and they plan a trip to the facility.
They can write us a check right there. We won't take cash. They can write us a check, or they can call into the Anchorage office or one of the other offices, and we have admin staff that will take a credit card payment over the phone.
Moore urges restaurant and food processor owners to ask questions when they get calls regarding inspections. He says get as much information as possible, especially return phone numbers. He says impersonating a public servant of the state is punishable by state law, and DEC has an environmental crimes unit to go after fraudulent inspectors. A big auction for blue king crab is underway in Seattle, and it's got some members of the seafood industry talking. The product isn't being sold by the usual distributors, and it isn't from Alaska waters. KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez has more on a government sell-off of seized Russian crab.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Office of Law Enforcement is managing the sale of nearly a quarter million pounds of king crab that they had seized after some evidence suggested that the product had been illegally caught in Russian waters. The sealed bid auction kicked off on July 5th, and it closes tomorrow. In the meantime, some crabbers have expressed concern that the auction is even taking place at all.
We're a little disappointed that there does appear to be an auction that's going to be occurring to sell this product to the highest bidder.
That said Polson, who represents the Alaska Bering Sea crabbers. He says that selling off that crab could distort the market since the blue king crab quota was small last year.
It's a significant portion if you compare it to the blue crab that we catch in Alaska. I mean, it's 25% of our entire quota.
Some crab distributors are also unhappy with the auction. Eric Donaldson of the Crab Broker says that the auction could hurt the market for Alaska crab, especially with the brown king crab season a month away.
I don't think it's fair to any legitimate operator, seafood, anybody in the seafood business. I don't think it's fair to any guy that plays by the rules to have that product out in the marketplace. I mean, I just don't think that that's fair.
Todd Dubois is the assistant director of NOAA's law enforcement office, and he says that he understands those concerns.
We're sensitive to that. We certainly are not looking to cause an adverse reaction in the market, nor an adverse reaction to domestic fishers who are working very hard to comply with the law.
He says that the ideas being floated by the seafood industry won't work, though, because legal proceedings involving the crab are still underway. Because seafood is perishable, the government can't just hold on to the crab until matters are resolved. But it can't just give it away either. Dubois says that should it turn out that the crab was not illegal, then the importer is going to have to be reimbursed at market value. And the only way to determine that value and make sure that money is on hand is to have an auction.
The option to donate it to, say, charity or a school system or anything like that, well, we look for those opportunities whenever we can. This is an ongoing legal proceeding. And because of that, while we have probable cause to believe that it's illegal, it's still to be determined by the judicial process.
Dubois adds that while the auction might seem unfortunate to some, NOAA sees it as being necessary for deterrence.
Well, this in the short term seems like a very negative thing to some, The reality is information we've already received from overseas, from our Russian counterparts and others, is that this particular case has actually already had a change in behavior being observed in how things are being scrutinized in Russia and other places about being sent to the United States.
The seized crab is expected to have a wholesale value of approximately $3 million. In Unalaska, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Elevated levels of bacteria have been found in water sampled at a Kenai River beach. The Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation has been working with the city of Kenai to take regular samples, and DEC Environmental Program Specialist Tim Stevens says that while elevated, they are not at dangerous levels. Still, precautions should be taken.
People should be careful, you know, make sure they wash their hands when they're done fishing or done cleaning their fish with fresh tap water, non-beach water. And the same goes for the fish that they're harvesting down there. Once they're all done cleaning the fish, if they're using marine water, make sure they rinse them again with fresh water. And then if they, when they go to consume them, they should cook them at least 145 degrees to kill the bacteria.
The two types of bacteria found are fecal coliform and enterococci. Both are found in warm-blooded animals.
They could come from humans, they could come from birds, they could come from dogs, they could come from whales and seals. It could be a variety of species contributing to what we're finding down there.
Finding out which one is the source will be one of the next steps in the process. The numbers released today are from samples taken on the beach on the south side of the mouth of the Kenai River on Tuesday and Thursday of last week.
We don't know. We're not sure of the sources. This year we are doing what they call microbial source tracking to try to find out what potential sources are contributing to the bacteria that we're finding out there.
The south and north beaches are the popular areas for personal use dip net fishing in July. The city of Kenai is concerned that the large amount of fish waste and the birds that the waste attracts might be the cause of the bacteria. But until more data is collected over the course of the summer, the DEC is not prepared to make a conclusion.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
And by
AT&T, rethink possible. Details at att.com/Alaska or 1-800-252-7266.
Fairbanks Borough voters will consider a ballot proposition this fall aimed at reducing fine particulate pollution. Thousands of signatures submitted by citizens sponsoring the Healthy Air Protection Act have been certified by the borough clerk's office, enabling the measure to appear on the October 4th municipal election ballot. Local air quality advocate and initiative sponsor Sylvia Schultz says the measure offers a comprehensive approach to reducing smoke that's resulted in Fairbanks' designation as a fine particulate pollution non-attainment area by the Environmental Protection Agency.
Prohibit in the non-attainment area the highly polluting devices. Those are the wood-fired hydronic heaters and coal-burning appliances. It establishes emission standards borough-wide for what levels of smoke are too much to have coming out of our chimneys or crossing property lines.
Schultz says the measure, which also increases fines for violations, targets misuse of wood-burning appliances. That's been an issue since voters passed a ballot proposition last fall that prevents the borough from banning or regulating the use of home heating devices. The vote reflected concern about high heating costs and intrusive government, but Schultz says signature gathers for the new petition heard a lot of public frustration.
People are repeatedly told us that they were sick of the smoke, that they were tired of hitting a wall of smoke when they entered Fairbanks and North Pole if they were outside the heavy smoke zones. And they're really concerned for the health of themselves, their children, the elders in our community.
Fairbanks is facing a December 2012 deadline for developing a plan to get in compliance with federal fine particulate pollution standards. John Brown's beach in Sitka is closed, and an explosives team from the U.S. Department of Defense is expected to take a look at what appears to be a small, old missile. The object might not have been found at all had it not been for a tourist who wandered a little too far afield and attracted the attention of the Coast Guard. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
This is Lynn Godfrey, who was just here on vacation from St. George, Utah.
We hiked the Chilkoot and decided to do some sightseeing in Alaska. So we went to Skagway, Sitka, Ketchikan, Juneau. Now we're headed back.
Godfrey, who loves to beachcomb, was wandering on John Brown's beach when she strayed a little too far afield at low tide.
Oh, we had been there for about 30 minutes, just kind of wandering in and out of the rocks and close to the water and taking photographs of the creatures that we found and continued to walk toward the airport.
Enter Daniel Hendricks, Operations Specialist First Class with the United States Coast Guard.
You know, we got a report that, you know, there was somebody at the end of the runway taking photos. I went down and made contact with her and asked her how she got where she got.
So I asked him if he wanted to see some of the pictures that I had taken so that he knew that we weren't there doing something, you know, shady, I guess you could say.
She had all these pictures of marine life, and, oh, there's a couple of the helicopters and the planes and stuff. And then, boom, it goes to this ordnance-looking deal. And it was like, hey, what is that, you know?
So he looked at the pictures, and then I said, oh, yeah, we found this missile. Here's a picture of it. This is the coolest picture ever. And he goes, you found a missile?
And I was like, oh, where'd you find that at? And she pointed me in the area.
You could tell it was very old. There was a round rock lodged in the end of it, and it was colored with green algae or green something. I don't know what it was exactly, moss maybe. And the tip of the missile was buried in the rock. I thought it was nothing until, you know, I showed the pictures to the Coast Guard. Look at this really cool picture I have of, and then his eyes kind of lit up. You found a what?
You know, in my experience in military, if it looks like it goes boom, it might go boom. I didn't let her come all the way where it was at. I just had her kind of take me towards the general direction. And then, you know, how much further? Okay, right there. We'll stay here just in case, you know, type deal. You get to thinking, I wonder how long this has been here. And, of course, you know, it's whenever the tide was at the lowest is when it was observed. So when the tide's up, you know, you wouldn't even know it was there. So, and it's kind of all the way at the point to where, you know, most people really don't go.
But, you know, I kind of felt bad the next day when I found out they had closed the beach. I felt bad that, you know, the entire beach was closed and nobody could go down there anymore. But honestly, I don't think it's anything. Who knows? It could be, but. Can you let me know?
That is Sitka visitor Lynn Godfrey and Coast Guard Operations Specialist First Class Daniel Hendricks discussing an object found along John Brown's beach that looks suspiciously like an old missile. A Defense Department team is on the way to Sitka to take a look and determine exactly what it is. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
The Sea Alaska Corporation has uncovered an old Haida canoe on the corporation's timberland near the Prince of Wales Island community of Kasan. The partially finished canoe may be centuries old and could provide a rare glimpse of canoe construction techniques using traditional tools. KFSK's Joe Vicknicki reports.
The 33-foot, 11-inch yellow cedar canoe was discovered last winter laying on the forest floor beneath a thick layer of moss. It's on Sea Alaska land near Kasan and was found by a surveyor for the Sea Alaska Timber Corporation, a subsidiary of the Regional Native Corporation. Sea Alaska Timber stopped its planned harvest for the site, and corporation officials, along with tribal members from Kasan, visited the find. Rosita Worrell is president of the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, a nonprofit formed by the corporation.
This was a very large canoe. We determined that it was made from traditional tools rather than modern contemporary tools. So it's rather an old one. We don't know how old, but we know that it predates, you know, the introductions of modern tools in the early 1900s.
Researchers will carbon date a sample from the canoe to get a more exact age. Sea Alaska contracted with Daniel Monteith, an anthropology professor at the University of Alaska Southeast, to survey the canoe site. The corporation says the canoe was nearly completed but was not steamed for its final shaping. Also found on the site was another log that apparently split when it was felled. In addition, five other cedars appeared to have been harvested nearby using traditional tools. Wuerl says initially researchers wanted to rule out that the area was a burial site, but that does not appear to be the case.
It definitely was what we call a production area. It was a site that was identified to have good trees. I mean, the carvers must have found this area. They identified it as having good trees that could be used for canoes and possibly totem poles.
The find is more unusual because the canoe was left unfinished in the forest and because it was carved using traditional tools. Sea Alaska consulted with the organized village of Kasan, the tribal government for the nearby community. Richard Peterson, president of OVK, calls the find a mixed blessing.
One, we're pretty excited, you know, to know about this particular site. But again, you know, us knowing means other people know, and you worry about those sites being disturbed or, you know, people exploring and maybe, you know, through that excitement of wanting to see something like that and exploring, that, you know, unintentional harm or damage comes to a place like that.
Peterson says a canoe is a very important piece of Native cultural history, and it's important to learn from discoveries like this one. As far as why this canoe is so far along in the carving process was left behind in the forest, he says there's only speculation at this point.
You know, old Kasan had been stricken with illness and smallpox and influenza and things like that. And, you know, maybe it hit during that time and that's why they left it.
The present-day village of Kasan was founded at the turn of the last century, and tribal members at that time had access to commercial timber cutting tools, making this find likely more than 100 years old. The president of Sea Alaska Timber estimates the standing cedar trees near the canoe are around 500 years old. The Heritage Institute's Wuerl hopes the canoe can be replicated as a learning tool for modern-day canoe makers and says it's an important find.
These kinds of things represent very tangible ties to our ancestors. And so to know that our ancestors, you know, worked on this, it's really important to Native people, to the Haida people. It's a tangible tie to their ancestors. But the other important thing is, you know, what can we learn about the technology of it?
The Native Corporation says it's keeping the site secure and private. Future decisions about the canoe and use of the site will be up to the village of Kasan. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicky.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Matt Miller in Juneau, Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska, Ben Stanton in Kenai, Ed Ronco in Sitka, and Joe Vicknicky in Petersburg. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.